and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing the state of the advisor nation and looking at advisor numbers and the emergence of artificial intelligence with Keith Richards, CEO of the Consumer Duty Alliance, and Mark Ormston, Director of Propositions and Corporate Partnerships at Retirement Line. Welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So, to start off, I think, as you both know, FT Advisor done a recent FOI with the FCA to kind of find out what was going on with advisor numbers. And we found that the number of firms authorised to provide retail investment advice has fallen from just over 6,000 from August 2022 to now just 5,800 as of February 2024. So it means around like 400 firms have now disappeared. And, you know, this is like a drop of 7% in just 18 months. However, the kind of advisor numbers have roughly stayed the same. So Keith, maybe we can start with you. Why are we kind of seeing, you know, a drop in advice firms, but advisor numbers kind of staying the same?
Yeah, thanks, Amy. I guess for many, there'll be no real surprise in the numbers, but they do validate concerns of potential financial advice capacity crunch. So potentially impacting existing clients, let alone widening the advice gap for new consumers. I guess the reduction in advisor numbers will be no surprise. The reduction in advisor firm numbers won't be a real surprise given the amount of consolidation that's been going on across the sector, mainly driven, of course, by advisors' motivation for succession planning and, of course, the readily availability of private equity funding. On the positive, as you've already pointed out, individual advisor numbers have been reasonably static. So the good news is we haven't actually lost advisors. In fact, from the FCA's stats, it looks like we've gained another 60 over the last 18 months. But it does provide evidence that the age demographic has been increasing. Quite a big shift in that we've now shifted up age bands over the past 18 months, with over 50% now aged 50 years or over, and over half of them or of that population well into their 60s. So we could be heading for what everyone fears as a bit of a capacity crunch coming up, as we're not really seeing the volume of new talent coming in. We've not seen a big exit so far through succession planning, but that could just be a delayed process.
Sure. And Marcus, do you think this like consolidation is probably the main kind of problem here?
I think that's the natural gut instinct response, isn't it, when you see that the advice firm's falling but the advisor numbers remaining fairly static. You see a lot of acquisition in the marketplace as well, so you're seeing that consolidation, so the numbers felt about right to me. But as Keith's already alluded to, I think that the more pressing point is where we're getting this fresh talent on, as well as retention of those not in that second half of their career. So I think that's really going to be one for us all to consider and do our best moving forward.
Sure. And kind of with these, you know, the drop in advice firms, do you think it's that, you know, more advisors are actually choosing to join networks, possibly due to the delays and issues that come with being directly authorised?
I think that's one factor. I think another factor as well is just the economy of scale that you can have during joining a network. I think it's fair to say that there's been a lot more regulatory pressures and compliance pressures put on advisory firms in recent years. So I do think that some people are looking at it from not only a delay point of view when you're first considering joining the advisory industry, but I think also people within it are now, like I say, going back to that consolidation point, are seeing those economy of scales and those pressures and want to share them by joining a network.
Sure. And Keith, I don't know if you have anything to add here and whether it's actually a problem for clients that there are less firms out there, even though advisor numbers are the same. Does it still become, you know, like difficult for clients to find an advisor this way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the problem is stems from the number of firms, because there's still quite a considerable number, even though we dropped by 7%. the bigger issue is when you start to see a significant drop in advisor numbers, if we're not managing to attract new talent quick enough to fill the gap. And that's what the statistics could well be telling us at the moment, given the amount of firms that have chosen to consolidate. So I think it's the problem that we've got. We've just gone through the consultation with the FCA and government on seeing how we can bridge the advice gap, which is really mainly a capacity. It's not a capacity issue. It's mainly a lack of engagement from consumers. If we start to see the impact of consolidation, meaning that after an advisor has sold their firm and gone through a period of 2 or 3 years to transition their clients across to the acquiring business, then and all of a sudden we see a bit of a surge in outflows of those advisors from the market, then that certainly will be a problem for existing clients who have become more dependent on an ongoing service, especially those that, of course, have gone into retirement and in particular drawdown.
Sure. And kind of looking at this outflow, we did do an FOI looking at advisor ages, and to put it quite frankly, it's not looking good. As you've kind of slightly mentioned, Keith, already, like there's only now, as of February 2024, 174 advisors out there that are actually under 25. And there's actually only like 1,600 who are between the ages of 25 to 29. Yet there's, nearly 10,000 that are kind of from the 50 to 59 bracket. And then there's over 6,000 who are over 60. And, these are the people that will be retiring, look to sell their business. But who are they going to sell it to when, there's no young advisors out there? How do you think we're going to kind of solve this problem, Keith?
Yeah, I think we've been grappling for a long time at the average age of advisors and whether we're going to see this big exit occur. I think the mechanism of consolidation, and certainly, the buzzword of succession, could mean that it becomes a reality. There are a number of things that we can do, but we are going to need to do them collectively. So, for example, in 2017, we did see the launch of the Financial Advisor Apprentice Standard, which had an initial positive impact and increased focus on attracting new talent to the profession, either graduates or apprentice. So we naturally saw a much bigger influx from 2017 onwards of some a younger age demographic coming into the advice sector. What's happened over the last 18 months is we seem to have lost that focus, and it's mainly we're relying on the second career market to attract them in. There's lots of great work our sector academies are doing aimed at graduates and apprenticeships, but the second career market has always been the main supply of new talent, which is evidenced by the FCA statistics that you've managed to get hold of. At the Consumer Duty Alliance, we are currently in the process of launching a new talent alliance forum, which really is aimed at bringing together key stakeholders from academies, training, recruitment and qualification bodies to create a principle of good practice sharing, guides to support small firms, and just as importantly, to augment the role of the services available and the various routes to the professional career in personal finance. So we'll be giving more details of that soon, but that will be launched in early April.
Sure, that sounds good. And Mark, what do you think kind of, as a profession, the advisors can do out there? Is it about, we've spoken about second careers, but second careers could still be, aged 50. It's how do we get, the 20-year-olds in and, finding advice as a good career?
Yeah, I mean, I was heartened by what Keith was saying there, and I was unaware of a couple of those in this initiative. So I think, again, it's building on the awareness of those. But I think for me, it really helps to have people, representation almost matters in many ways, and that includes age as well. So those smaller numbers that you mentioned, Amy, just over 2,000 of being 30 and under, actually we need to really engage with these people, and they're going to be the people that actually attract more of the people of their own age in. So we really need to lean into these young professionals, make sure that they're comfortable in their careers, and then can actually advocate for the profession itself. Because if we just rely on those coming towards the second half of their careers, then actually we might not be able to fully engage with the younger audience.
Sure. And should we be kind of, you know, relying on these, on the bigger firms and the networks, for example, because, you know, quite a lot of them now do have their own advisor academies and are training people up. And they are doing a good job, in my opinion, from what I've seen, you know, to train people up and get advisors in. However, you know, when I've spoken to smaller firms who can also, you know, have the capacity to take on apprentices and, you know, like school leavers and stuff like that, they've said they don't really have the inclination to do it. Because of the cost, you know, they spend all this money training up an advisor, you know, getting them to where they be, getting them through their qualifications, teaching them the soft skills. They'll be with them for a year and then, you know, the shiny networks come along and snap them up, or, you know, they'll go and think, oh, actually, I want to go join, you know, one of the bigger firms. And then they've got to start all over again and that cost again. So they're kind of, you know, they're not really having the kind of inclination to go ahead and do it. Do you think this needs to be addressed and we need to do more of, you know, talking to the smaller firms? Or do you think that actually with the academies and the networks, you know, we will be able to solve this problem?
I think it's from my point of view, and I'm sure Keith will come in on this, but from my point of view, it has to be collaborative, it has to be collective across all scales across the industry, because if we don't and we leave it just to the large networks, we may well find that we're not getting the full results that we're trying to achieve here. And again, it's not just attracting that attention, those candidates from the outset, which is a very positive first step, but then we also have to look at the retention figures, because as you track this data through, Amy, through your FOIs, it'll be really interesting to see how many of those young talents that we get into the academy then fall away.
Sure. And Keith, I don't know if you have anything to add to this.
Yeah, sure, Amy. I think, you know, anyone who's passionate about this profession has a role to play, whether they're personally wanting to recruit new talent or not. As previously mentioned, there are some great initiatives across the sector through academies, Next Gen Planners, Verve Group and professional bodies, etc. But united, we can have an even greater impact, which is why we're launching a new talent alliance. So with circa 80% of the 5,805 firms in the market, which are deemed to be small, in other words, five people or less, much greater sharing of good practice and guidance and support needs to be provided. So as many of the points that you've made, I've experienced firsthand in various roles in the past. You know, it is difficult for a small firm that haven't got dedicated training departments or resources available. And it can be quite a negative impact if you've trained someone up only to train them up for someone else in 2 years' time. Having said that, there are ways in which that can be tackled. So the sharing of good practice to give small firms greater confidence can have a profound positive result. So now, second to that, many small firms are thinking about, do I want to consolidate? Do I want to sell my business? Or do I want it to exist long after I've retired? And we're already seeing quite a few firms now starting to think about the succession planning, about bringing new talent in, training them up. But actually, there are mechanisms that you can make them feel better part of the organisation, so you don't run into those inevitable bear traps of training them up for someone else's benefit later. So that sharing of good practice is really important. But if you think about it, the big firms, of course, are doing a great job. There are some really good initiatives out there. But often, of course, they need to bring that talent in for their own firm's needs. Others, of course, are providing it more broader. If you think about 5,805 firms actively being involved, even if a firm is signposting the benefits of joining the profession as a career and signposting them to other organisations that might be able to facilitate entry into the market, then we could make a big difference together.
Sure. And how do you think, you know, we kind of reach the younger people and the school leavers, the uni leavers, all stuff like this? Do you think social media is the answer? Because, I mean, every young person is on social media, you know, nowadays. Most people are on TikTok, Instagram, you know, X. Everyone's kind of on there. Do you think this is the best place to reach them? Because it seems to me that schools aren't kind of, you know, promoting the profession, you know. when I was back in school, and it was a few years ago now, but, you know, I knew that accountancy was a career. I knew I could be a lawyer. I knew I could do that. You know, I could be a teacher. I could do X, Y, Z. So all of these professions like, are known, but I would have had no idea that becoming a financial advisor was a thing. So how do we kind of, you know, get it out there and spread the word?
Yeah, I think there are a number of mechanisms that we need to use. Again, you know, if you look at the 30,000 advisors across the country, you know, if each of them decided to take on a personal initiative to either go into a school or university, we could have a profound impact in raising the awareness of a career or in a true profession. The apprenticeship in particular, I think we're going to see more emerge from a revised apprenticeship program. And that's really key because it's not just about those coming out of university. It's those that are actually coming out of secondary education who don't go to university, where they can actually get a degree by joining a sector that is a recognised profession and allows you to carry on up to, for example, chartered status, which means that they can achieve their degree in the workplace. So there are some real opportunities that could be quite motivational, not only for young people, but actually the parents of those young people who don't today necessarily recognize financial advice as a profession in the same way that you've highlighted. They would automatically think of accountancy, law, or for that matter, banking. I've spoken at many universities during my career to graduates on financial services degree programs. Very few of them recognize financial advice in the same way that they do, for example, banking, which they see as a highly paid sector. So, of course, if you're a young aspiring person, why wouldn't you want to go into something that seems to be financially very rewarding? So I think we've got to change the image. We're still a little bit stuck in with a bit of a legacy past where financial advice is something that happened across the counter in the bank or has got a bit of a tarnished reputation through previous mis-selling scandals. So, but collectively and in a way that's more united, I think we've got a real chance of addressing that. It is emerging as a profession, unquestionably, but we're still a very young profession, and I think we've got to join together to get the message out there in a consistent way.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you have anything to add here, Mark.
No, I think Keith's done an excellent job there. I do agree. It's very much a case of that we have got a general awareness issue. So I think that can be tackled through various different methods. I think the other way to look at it as well, and it's going to be touched upon through the apprenticeship schemes, but I do think, you know, we do need to look at the barriers to entry or the perceived barriers to entry to some people. So once we've looked at those pain points and think about ways of how we can overcome these, and for some that might well be, you know, time for learning, time cost to get through the exams, etc. If we can think around the initiatives and knocking down some of these barriers, I think that can only be a positive thing.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of what you see as well, you know, Keith, you say people, you know, look at banking, it's because, you know, we all have a bank account, we all go to the bank, but you don't necessarily, you know, as a young person get financial advice. So it might just be that, you know, it is just an, as you say, like an image thing, like getting the profession out there and showing that, you know, it is a good profession. You know, you can make good money, you have a work-life balance, you know, there is real positives to it. So it is probably just getting that out and shouting the word about advisors.
Yeah, I think the other thing, I mean, you got to remember in other professions, it's made up of a much greater population of large firms who have the resources to go into universities to recruit their next cohort of employees. So they kind of do a great job as an employer of attracting new talent because they need to populate their own organization. But in doing so, they elevate the profession that they're representing. Our challenge, which you highlighted earlier, you know, we are made up of over 5,500 regulated firms, 80% of which are deemed to be small. So they just don't have the same resources to throw at that, which is why, again, you know, without overplaying the need to do it in a more collaborative way and be a bit more united in the way that we come together and as an alliance. And that doesn't mean to say that competition and diversity and inclusion are all really important things to maintain, which is an alliance doesn't take away from that. But we've got to learn from other sectors. We can't replicate the banks who've got extremely deep pockets and have programs to go into every university in the country to position a career in banking. It often feels very lucrative and there's lots of support programs to do that. So I think we've just got to consider that it's not that people wouldn't consider a career in professional advice, it's that they just don't understand it.
Yeah.
It's not recognised. So I think, there's a bit of work that needs to be done, but if we can come together and get others to join into the spirit, even if they're not interested in recruiting, they might want to see their profession survive for the long term, then we've got a really good chance at combating this.
Definitely. And do you think, the use of artificial intelligence is, it is kind of becoming a thing and, better tech and all stuff like that in the profession. Do you think that, as we kind of go on this path as well, this might help, kind of attract young people, if we're making jobs slightly easier, like using AI to help us?
Yeah, definitely. We've always believed that advancements in technology represent a real opportunity for advice firms. But of course, initially, they're often seen as being a threat. Mm. Generative AI is no exception, but it is yet to fully capture the essence of personal conversation between clients and advisors. So it's still in its very early stages. It will undoubtedly play a key role. It will probably play a key role for some early adopters in creating a more competitive landscape. But we're already seeing that it holds immense potential to assist financial advisors in various aspects of their work. So, for example, the use of drafting reports, suitability letters and content creation, streamlining the process and ensuring accurate or personalised communications with clients. So it has an emerging and important role to play. The key point, though, because everyone focuses on the threat, it is genuinely an opportunity, because if it allows you to streamline and be more effective, it releases people's time to do things that are far more important, like engaging with the client directly. So I think, we're yet to see, a model that's perfect as far as AI is concerned. And as we know, there's lots of risk warnings with the use of AI, but undoubtedly it will play a key role for the future and advisors will embrace it once they understand how to effectively utilise it.
Sure, I think that's the whole thing with anything in this world, isn't it? Once you understand something, it no longer becomes scary. But Mark, yeah. What about you as an advisor, friend or foe?
No, I think we have to be friends. I think it's the honest answer, but I think, just touch upon it, the potential there's substantial. And I think, linking it to a prior conversation around just awareness of the industry, of the profession itself, actually, that's where I'm getting a lot of the passion and excitement from people like behavioral scientists and big data experts, that they're really interested in what the profession does and how AI can complement the service that we're being offered.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I guess it's just a matter of time and we'll just have to see, and we'll get you back on in another 18 months and see where we are then. if we're all still around and still doing this. Well,
yeah.
Tune in next week and we will discuss other goings on in the industry.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.